As we begin number 10, we encounter David as he flees from Saul, a young man confused, wondering what it all means, knowing that the prophet Samuel had anointed him several years before to be king of Israel, now being forced to flee from the man who currently occupies the throne. We will discover that David has a great deal of maturing to do. Immediately as he leaves the area where Saul lives and flees into the hill country, chapter 21 says that he arrived at Nob to Ahimelech the priest. Ahimelech had heard ahead of time about the military exploits of Saul. Scripture says that Ahimelech came trembling to David, wondering what David wanted with him. I'm sure that Ahimelech knew that Saul hated David and had on occasion tried to kill him. To ease the mind of Ahimelech, David resorts to a lie in verse 2 when he says, "The king has commissioned me with a matter." This lie by David caused the death of Ahimelech and the entire family of Ahimelech later in chapter 22, verse 18. David's lie, like the commitment of Joshua centuries before, will result in the suffering of many innocent people a very short time hence. The priest helps David by giving him food, and the sword of Goliath, which has been kept wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod in the area where the priest dwells. David rose and fled from Saul and went to the most logical place in his mind, the place where Saul would never go, that was to Achish, king of Gath, one of the five major Philistine cities. David, I assume, believed that he would not be recognized. But upon arriving in the city of Gath, the other Philistines looked at him, squinted just a little bit, and said, "Isn't this about whom they sang, 'Saul has killed his thousands and David his 10,000s?'" And the Philistines knew that the poem and the song was created because of David's victory over the Philistines. When David realized that they recognized him, he feared Achish, king of Gath. In those times, a person who was insane was considered to be a holy person. Or because of the superstition of the people, they did not want to bring harm to anyone who was insane. As a result, in many of the courts of the land, insane people were kept almost as good luck charms, or as prevention against evil spirits. David, I suppose, realizing this, pretended to play the madman before Achish, king of Gath. He began to scribble on the gates. He let saliva run out of the corner of his mouth, on his beard, and he acted completely incoherent. This was the perfect disguise in the presence of the Philistines. Achish said, "You see that the man is crazy. Why are you bringing him here to me? Do I lack madmen? I have enough around me. Do I need any more that you've brought me this one?" Well, because of this, verse 1, chapter 22 said, David escaped to the cave of Adullam. David's in a cave, and his brothers and all of his father's household heard of it, and they went down to the cave of Adullam. The cave of Adullam is about 15 miles southwest of Bethlehem and approximately 15 miles east of Gath. So it was not a long journey from the city of Gath where Achish dwelt, but far enough to be safe from his presence and safe from King Saul as well. The superscription of Psalm 57, which is part of the inspired psalm, says that this psalm was written by David when he fled from Saul in the cave. "Be merciful unto me, O God, be merciful unto me, for my soul trusteth in thee. Yea, in the shadow of thy wings I will make my refuge until these calamities be overpassed." Verse 4, "My soul is among lions, and I lie even among them that are set on fire. Even the sons of men whose teeth are spears and arrows, and their tongue a sharp sword. Verse 6, they have prepared a net for my steps. My soul is bowed down. They have digged a pit before me, in the midst whereof they are fallen themselves. My heart is fixed, O God, my heart is fixed. I will sing and give praise. Verse 10, for thy mercy is great unto the heavens, and thy truth unto the clouds. David's faith remains firm, God is praised and exalted, and David trusts in God to deliver him from those that have laid a snare for him. Chapter 22 in 1 Samuel continues in verse 2. After his family came down, all those who were in debt, all those who were discontented, all those in distress gathered to him there, about 400 men. With this verse, we can see that David becomes the Robin Hood of the Old Testament. All the rabble of the land gathered themselves to David. He became captain over a mob, but he will eventually take this mob of malcontents and mold them into a fighting force. David goes from there to Mizpah of Moab. He crosses the Jordan, and he says to the king of Moab, let my father and mother stay with you. And he left them with the king of Moab, and they stayed with him all the time that David was back in the stronghold by En-Gedi, west of the Dead Sea. Certainly, when Saul found out that David was organizing a small army, this would be seen as an attempt at a military coup. David knows his family would be endangered. So he leaves his mother and father with the king of Moab. And the king of Moab keeps them until a later time. Before long, Saul discovers what's happening, and he accuses his servants of conspiring with David. We see that Saul is becoming paranoid. And lo and behold, Doeg the Edomite steps forward in chapter 22, verse 9, and recounts the fact that he happened to be present when David came up to Nob and conversed with Ahimelech the priest. This was recorded in chapter 21, verse 7. Doeg is the snake in the grass. And he said not only that, but Ahimelech helped him. He gave him provisions. He gave him the sword of Goliath. Saul sends for Ahimelech and says, why have you conspired against me? He tells him he shall surely die, he and all his father's household. Immediately when Saul makes this statement, our minds should flash back to 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 31, when we remember the curse on Eli's household. The king turns and says, kill the priests. But the servants of the king were not willing to put forth their hands to attack the priests of the Lord. They knew better. But now the king turns to Doeg the Edomite. And the Edomite turned and attacked the priest and killed 85 men who wore the linen ephod. Doeg the Edomite struck Nob, the city of the priests. He killed the men, the women, the children, the infants, the donkeys, and sheep. Following this slaughter, the tabernacle and the altar were moved to Gibeon. But one son of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, named Abathar, escaped and fled after David. Abathar is the only survivor, and also, as recorded back in 1 Samuel 2:27, Abathar is the sole survivor of the curse on the house of Eli. Abathar came and he told David all that Saul had done. David said to Abathar, no doubt in tears, he said, I knew that Doeg the Edomite was there and that he would surely tell Saul, I have brought death on every person of your father's household. And he asked Abathar to stay with him. We also know because of a later scripture in chapter 23, verse 9, that Abathar, when he escaped, brought the ephod and evidently the breastplate of righteousness. And he is the great-great-grandson of the wicked priest Eli. Chapter 23 records the continued attempt of Saul on the life of David. By verse 13, David's band of 400 men has grown to a band of 600 men, and David is continually successful in escaping from the attempts of Saul to take his life. Jonathan arises and meets David at Horesh, and Jonathan becomes an encouragement to David. And he says in verse 17, "Don't be afraid. I know that my father Saul won't find you, and I know that you will be king of Israel, and I will be next to you. And Saul, my father, knows it as well." What spiritual insight Jonathan had. And the two of them made a covenant before the Lord, and Jonathan went back to the house of Saul. The Ziphites advised Saul of David's hiding place, but before Saul could attack them there, God sent a diversion. And as he went after David, verse 27 says, "A messenger came and told Saul that the Philistines had made a raid on the land. So Saul returned from pursuing David and went to meet the Philistines. And David went up from there back to his stronghold at En-Gedi." Chapter 24 opens with Saul returning from pursuing the diversion which God had sent. And it was told him that David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi. Saul picks 3,000 of his choice men, and along the way goes into a cave, but unknown to Saul, David and his men are back deeper in the cave. And the men of David said, "This is a chance you've been waiting for. Take his life now." But David rose and secretly cut off the edge of Saul's robe. And David had such a tender heart and a tender conscience that it even bothered him that he cut off the edge of Saul's robe. And he says in verse 6, "Far be it from me that I should do this thing to the Lord's anointed, that I even stretched out my hand against him in this regard." And David restrains his men from attacking Saul and killing him. We will discover this marked difference between a carnal man and a spiritual man. The carnal man always wants to take God's program into his own hands, or he will want to see that God's program does not succeed if he is not included. I draw your attention to Abram, who took God's program into his own hands in his relationship with Hagar. I now draw your attention to the fact that David is a spiritual man and does not wish to intervene in God's program in any way, but will allow God to get rid of Saul in his own good time. Saul, on the other hand, as a carnal man, wants to make certain that God's program does not succeed. So he attempts to kill David, even now being aware of the fact that David is to be his successor. Almost 100 years later, when Solomon discovers that God is going to take the kingdom from him and leave his progeny with only two tribes, he attempts to make certain that God's program does not succeed by attempting to take the life of the man that God has chosen as his successor over the northern 10 tribes. Even Solomon, who began on such a high spiritual plateau, ends his days as a carnal man. And so it is here. David has a tender heart. David will not touch God's anointed. And once Saul leaves the cave, David goes outside. And he says, "Saul, why do you listen to the words of these men that are speaking against me? I do not want to harm you. I could have killed you this very day. But now look, I cut off the edge of your robe, and I did not kill you. How can you believe that I want to harm you? May the Lord judge between you and me, and may the Lord avenge me on you, but my hand shall not be against you." And now Saul, quite mad, disturbed emotionally, begins to cry, "Oh, my son David, you are more righteous than I. If you were really my enemy, you would not have let me escape." And Saul, in his own crazy, confused way, admits his mistake. "May the Lord reward you with good in return for what you've done. Listen to the words of Saul in verse 20. I know that you shall surely be king, and that the kingdom of Israel will be established in your hand. Then why doesn't he repent? Why doesn't he relent? Why doesn't he welcome David? Because he's evil. And he says, swear to me that you won't cut off my house after me. David swore to Saul, and Saul went back to his home, and David and his men went back to the stronghold. Of course, earlier he had sworn the same thing to Jonathan in chapter 20, verses 15 and 16. Saul is in such a state now that he cannot even act rationally. By having the priests at Nob murdered by Doeg the Edomite, this was the third tragic sin in the life of Saul. As we continue to follow the life of David in chapter 25, we see that it is approximately 1012 B.C., because in verse 7, chapter 27, we read the following. And the number of days that David lived in the country of the Philistines was a year and 4 months, or approximately 16 months, and only a month or two would have passed between that time and the events in chapter 25. So knowing that David was crowned king in 1010, it's only about 2 years prior to his being crowned king that the events in chapter 25 transpire. By this time, David and his men have become professional soldiers. They are mercenaries. Their self-proclaimed job is to protect the inhabitants of the land from marauders, from those who would raid the crops and pillage the villages, and from the Philistines, who occasionally send war parties into the southern territory. In return for this kind of protection, David and his men expect to receive from the hands of the inhabitants of the southern area food and provisions and those various necessities of life. In chapter 25, we are introduced to a wealthy man named Nabal and his wife Abigail. David has been protecting this southern part of the country near Carmel, which is the Carmel southeast of Hebron by Ziph. And it's a special day in the life of Nabal because it's sheep shearing day. It was always a time of celebration, and on this day, David sends 10 of his young men. They meet Nabal, and they ask Nabal for some food for the army. Nabal says, who is this David, and who's the son of Jesse? There are more runaway slaves around this country now than I can count. Should I take my bread and water and meat that I've slaughtered for my men that are working here, shearing the sheep, and give the food to men whose origin I don't even know? So the young men are depressed, and they walk back to the camp. And David said, that's it. Put on your sword. He had 400 men and left 200 behind. And as he went on his way, someone just happened to meet Abigail, Nabal's wife. And he said, behold, David sent messengers up today from the wilderness. And he met our master Nabal, and Nabal scorned him. The young men were very good to us. We were not insulted, nor did we miss anything. As long as we went about with them while we were in the fields, they protected us. They were a wall to us by day, and they watched over us. And now, therefore, no one consider, because evil is plotted against our master and all his house, and old Nabal is such a worthless man anyway that nobody can even talk to him. Abigail is afraid. She's afraid for her household. But she's a spiritual woman, and she hurries and takes 200 loaves of bread and wine and 5 sheep and runs on her way. And she gets some young men, and she says, go on before me and tell David I'm coming after you, but don't tell my husband. And she doesn't either. And she's riding on her donkey. And David has said in verse 21, I guarded this man's house in vain, and now he's given me evil for good. May God do so to the enemies of David and more, if I leave as much as one man among any who belong to him. And David's on his way to kill everybody. David's a rough individual in these times. He lives by his wits and by his sword. And he trusts in God, but he's a man who has been forced to live an existence apart from the comforts of city life. And bloodshed is a way of life with David. And he's on his way to kill all the servants of Nabal. And Abigail runs and meets him, and she falls on her face, and she says, "O Lord, on me be the blame. Don't let my Lord pay attention to this worthless man, my husband, Nabal. For as his name is, so is he." And Nabal means fool. And Nabal is his name, and folly is with him. And Abigail makes a marvelous prophecy in verse 28 when she says that the Lord will certainly make for my Lord David an enduring house. As a result of Abigail's intercession, David's heart is tender and warmed toward her. And David said in verse 33, "Blessed be your discernment and blessed be you, because you've kept me this day from bloodshed and from avenging myself by my own hand." And the seriousness of this can only be determined when we remember what took place in 1 Samuel 24, verse 12, when David said just a short time before, "May the Lord avenge me on you, but my hand shall not be against you," referring to Saul. And now David, in his heated anger, forgets that the Lord is the avenger and is about to avenge himself. And now he's thankful for Abigail, and he backs down, and his temper calms down, and he says, "Okay." David received from her hand what she had brought. Verse 36, Abigail went back home, and Nabal now is having a big feast. And it came about when the wine had gone out of Nabal that his wife told him these things. And I'm sure that she said, "Nabal, you came just a hair's breadth away from being killed." And when Nabal heard this, it says his heart died within him, and he became as a stone, evidently a stroke. And as a result of this stroke, 10 days later, God struck him and he died. And when David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, "Blessed be the Lord, who has pleaded the cause of my reproach." So God did avenge himself, and God avenged David. And we will find this to be a constant and recurring theme through the Psalms. Since Nabal is dead, David takes Abigail to be his wife. She was actually his third wife, because verse 43 says that he had taken Ahinoam of Jezreel, and his previous wife, Michal, the daughter of Saul, had been given to Palti, the son of Laish, who was from Galim, after David had fled from the presence of Saul. Chapter 26, the Ziphites came again to Saul, and they are a traitorous bunch, aren't they, the Ziphites? And they told Saul a second time that Saul was hiding in the hills. They had told Saul the first time back in chapter 23, verse 19. Saul, forgetting his earlier promise to David, in his madness now, forgetting that David could have taken his life before, goes out again. And David sent out spies and knew this time that Saul was definitely coming. And David saw the place where Saul lay, and Saul and Abner, his commanding officer, were down in the circle of the camp, and all of his soldiers are camped around him, verse 5 says. Unbeknownst to Saul and Abner and the rest of the army, David is watching everything that's going on. This is risky business. They are like commandos. They've crawled out on their stomachs and are hiding in the underbrush and watching the army of Saul below. And David says to Ahimelech the Hittite and to Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, Joab's brother. Zeruiah was the daughter of Jesse, and she would have been David's sister. 2 Samuel 2, verse 18 says that Zeruiah had three sons, Joab, Abishai, and Asahel, and these are the three valiant warriors that David turned to so often until tragedy struck later on in 2 Samuel 2. But now David and these commandos are there, and he says, "Who will go down with me to Saul in the camp?" And Abishai said, "I will go down with you." So nephew Abishai and Uncle David go down to the camp of Saul. Abishai begins to encourage David that again God has delivered Saul into his hand, and Abishai said, let me pin him to the ground with a spear. One time is all it's going to take. But again, the key to David's life is found in verse 9, when David says, do not destroy him, don't kill him, don't touch him. Who can stretch out his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless? David said, as the Lord lives, the Lord will strike him. So David now has control of himself. He knows that God will bring his program to pass when he's ready. He said, or his day will come that he dies, one or the other. Or he will go down into battle and perish. So David has a triple option. He doesn't rule God out of any of these things, nor does he box God in the alternatives he gives. He said God will strike him in an unusual way, or he'll die of old age, or he's going to go into battle and perish. God will choose the latter option to dispense of Saul. But the Lord forbid that I should stretch out my hand against the Lord's anointed. But take the spear that he has at his head and his jug of water. Take these two and we'll sneak back away with them. David took the spear and the jug of water from beside Saul's head, and no one knew that they were there, because a sound sleep from the Lord had come upon them. David goes back over to the other side and stands on a mountain, and then he calls out. He puts his hands over his mouth, I'm sure, and says, Abner! That's the commander-in-chief of the army. And he said, why won't you answer, Abner? And Abner rouses himself and says, who are you who calls to the king? And David says, aren't you a man, Abner? Who is like you in all Israel? And if you're such a man, Abner, why haven't you guarded your lord the king? For one of the people came down to destroy your lord the king. And Abner, you've abandoned your post. That's not good. You didn't guard the Lord's anointed. See if you can locate the king's spear and try to find the jug of water that he had. Saul recognizes his voice, and David says, why are you still trying to kill me? I could have killed you. And Saul, insane now, screams, I have sinned. Return my son. I've played the fool. And David said, send somebody over to get the spear. Your life was valued in my sight. So David went his way, and Saul returned to his place.